Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news from the WordPress community. Now, welcome your hosts, David Wormsley and Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there, and welcome once again to the WP Builds Podcast. You have reached episode number 381, entitled NoScript Show Episode 13, What is the W3C Doing About AI? It was published on Thursday the 18th of July, 2024. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and before I'm joined by David Wormsley for our chat, a few bits of housekeeping. The first thing to mention is that if you are into WP Builds, head to our subscribe page, wpbuilds.com/subscribe. Over there, you're going to find all sorts of links related to how you can keep in touch with us, what channels we publish on, and so on. Feel free to share those. But importantly, why not sign up for our newsletter? We'll produce one episode on a Tuesday, which is a follow-up to our This Week in WordPress show, which we do live on a Monday. And we'll also send you an email on a Thursday. So two emails a week, no spam promise included with those emails. wpbuilds.com/subscribe. The other thing to mention is that if you enjoy the WP Builds podcast, please be sure to share it. Perhaps go to your podcast player of choice and give us a thumbs up, give us a review, whatever that platform will allow. We would really appreciate that. And last but by no means least, head to wpbuilds.com/advertise if you would like to get your product or service out in front of a WordPress-specific audience, a bit like these three fine companies. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. You can find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. And we're also sponsored by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And we're also sponsored by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend, the email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of rollercoaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. And sincere thanks go to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost, and Omnisend for their continuing support of the WP Builds podcast. Okay, what have we got for you today? Well, it's a NoScript show episode. If you've been following along, David Wormsley has stepped away from the WordPress space, but we decided to do a non-WordPress podcast. It's called NoScript Show, and in that show, we highlight HTML, CSS, and the W3C and all of the different bits and pieces that they're doing to make things easier, to basically make your website in a text editor, the old-fashioned way. And today, we're talking about the W3C's approach to AI. What does AI mean? Are there any constraints on what we should be doing in terms of AI? Has the W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium, got a posture on this? The World Wide Web Consortium, of course, is the backbone of everything that we do with web development and websites. So it's a really interesting conversation. We bring some useful information from thought leaders in this space to the debate, and I hope that you enjoy it. Welcome to the NoScript show about modern web design, where we look at what we can build today with minimal software and skills. Today, we're talking about AI from the perspective of the W3C, or the World Wide Web Consortium. Helping us with this is a new report from the W3C team called AI and the Web, Understanding and Managing the Impact of Machine Learning Models on the Web.
Additionally, we have Tim Berners-Lee, AI predictions, thanks to some recent comments when celebrating 35 years on the web. So, David, this is a topic we both enjoy debating, so it'll be interesting to see how our positions on AI have advanced. And with that, over to you.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking for about 2 hours before this.
Yes.
We just couldn't.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So we kind of caught up on that. So we'll try and stick, I think, as best as we can to what the W3C are saying, because we can go off on so many tangents. And
right.
I think there'll be other subjects here, won't they? But, you know, I'll give you my quick summary. I kind of am in the position where I think I was excited about it, and I still am, but I've never really bought into the fact that it's something creative going to threaten any creative job that I might do. I quite like how the large language machines are helping me to do some really tedious tasks these days. And I do think it's quite interesting because it feels a little bit like we've moved away from that initial hype where we were more panicked about it, and we're seeing more of the kind of news where companies are feeling forced a little bit to exaggerate what it can do. We're seeing more about how it might be so much more costly to make it advance in the way that we expect it to advance. So, yeah, so it's quite interesting. Since the last time we spoke about it, there was more sort of panic over it, where it feels a bit more relaxed now.
I flip-flop on this subject. I go from deep admiration of AI and the things that it can do to blind panic, like Chicken Little, the sky is falling in. And I really do. And I think the reason is because in some areas where I honestly thought computers, let's call it that, computers could never encroach. So the creation of artwork or the creation of songs, that kind of thing, I really did think 5 years ago that that would be an impossibility. There was something about the human brain which was unique. And then more recently, when things which you could call art and things which we could call music came along, it really did start to make me think, gosh, okay, this is a worry. And I think the worry for me is that we're going to gouge out the bottom rung of the ladder. If you imagine a ladder, a career ladder, if you like, and you need people to get on the first step of the ladder in order to then progress to other things as their career goes on and what have you. And it feels like AI has the potential to just knock out the first bottom two steps of the ladder, because it can approximate, you know, a decent song. It can approximate a decent logo or whatever it might be. And so I worry that the people who might have had those jobs and therefore gained experience, they're going to somehow have to get above what the AI can do to be useful in a career. So that worries me. But then equally, I think over the last year, I'm feeling this sense of plateau in what the AIs can do. You know, it doesn't really seem like what it could do a year ago is that different from what it can do now. And I kind of expected that that would be logarithmic. It would just improve at a greater rate, whereas it seems to have plateaued. But the other thing is, with technology since, let's say, the turn of the millennium, so 2000, you didn't really know what the intention was. You didn't really have a roadmap in your head of what the internet ought to be like. It just kind of evolved. Whereas with AI, you can perceive what that is, and that is a replacement of humans. You know, if you can get an AI to create a perfect film, a perfect song, well, you know what that is already. Whereas the internet, I don't know what that is. I never knew what it was going to be. So anyway, so I think on balance, I'm more sanguine about it. And certainly every time I've used AI for the tiny little corner of the, you know, the AI possibilities that I use it for, I've been profoundly impressed by what it can do. And I have this notion in my head, which is probably self-deception in a way, because I would have been doing all of that work myself. And I'm not therefore doing somebody out of work. I'm just saving myself some time. I feel that that's a decent trade-off. But obviously, if that were played out across the whole world, that might not be quite such a good endeavor. Anyway, sorry, that was a complete rant.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Actually, it's just, you made me think of something we didn't even talk about before. But I think, you know, when it might cut out that bottom layer, the fundamentals, that, funny enough, is where I think it fails. Because I think, you know, where it's pretty rubbish at doing stuff is like things like marking out some HTML which might be appropriate to the context it needs to be, or it's terrible with CSS, I've found. And I think, you know, sometimes when it might take some of the chore out of things that are absolutely known, you know, so, it's, you know, I used it for WordPress, really impressive, because if you like the PHP commands that you might use, the old ones for traditional WordPress are so set that there's not much variation. So ask it to do something which I couldn't do. It could do the code which I couldn't do. But I know it's going to be correct, you know, because there's only so many outputs, where I think, you know, sometimes the fundamental structuring of a website or something, it just doesn't do it right. And it's the same because it's always looking backwards on its stuff. You know, CSS has evolved particularly, so it doesn't know the new stuff, and it looks back to the majority of the old stuff, which is kind of not the best way to do it. So I find that actually in some ways it's, you know, I'm going back to the basics of the very early web and trying to get to understand things which I thought I knew but don't, HTML and CSS particularly, as it's changing. I think it's so bad at those things that, I have to guide it on the fundamentals. So that is my worry actually with AI, is that sometimes it can be used to fill in what you think is. A good example for me is AI with, I was talking about this, I did a short video, AI with alt tags for images seems to be a new thing to do that. And you think, yeah, that's great. But if you think about it for 1 second, the last thing a blind person wants is, you know, all this wonderful prose on what this image looks like. They want to know what
a game changing, whatever. Yeah, just over superlative.
Yeah, but do you remind me the whole. No, what I'm saying is that, you know, if you really describe a full image as AI.
Oh, I see. Yes, it won't know how to truncate itself or, yeah.
Exactly. Actually, what that image is doing, it wants to know what that image is doing, what parts of that image are meaningful to the context in which it's set, and the rest is all superfluous.
Yeah.
So do you see what I mean? I can see where it's at these lower level things, some of these other jobs where I think you actually have to be a human being because you're providing for other human beings. Anyway,
but that's interesting. And I do wonder, like particularly with the example of CSS, because the CSS isn't the point. The point is what the CSS does, which is visual.
Yes.
I wonder if the AI at the moment, these large language models, I wonder if they can make the connection, you know, okay, here's some code, but what does that actually end up looking like is the point. And it might not be able to bridge that gap, if you know what I mean. So I don't know. I'm entirely ignorant of whether that's even a thing, but yeah.
And for speed, I want it to be fast and in the context of the whole site, and it just can't sort of do it. And I just avoid it because, well, you just start hallucinating as AI does when I start, you know, it doesn't know stuff. It thinks it does. I love sending it off down its hallucinations where it believes it's right and it's completely wrong. And then
you like to enjoy watching it.
Well, okay. But for other stuff, it's great. When you know, when you're making the creative decisions, treating it as a dumb assistant, I think is wonderful. Shall we bring up the notes? Because honestly, we'll just go on.
Yeah, I will do that one moment. Not. Here we go. This is the note. So if you're listening to this, let me get the number right, because in the past I've got the numbers of the episodes wrong. So we're on episode number 13, and so if you go to noscript.show/13, you'll be able to find the show notes. Have I got the episode right for a start?
Yes, you have. Yeah, lucky for
great.
Everyone.
Yeah. Okay, great. So here we are. Where should we launch first? Yeah. This W3C report?
Yeah, I just thought this was a good chance because it's recently out, and it's obviously the title doesn't really beg it to be read. It's an academic paper, and there is a presentation. I've got a link on the show notes, which goes to the YouTube channel there. But the guy behind that, it's maybe not, he's French. So if you can tune into his accent, you might find it quite interesting as a quick sort of summary of what they're trying to do with that. But my understanding is, it comes from the W3C team. Is that what they call themselves? Yeah. And
yes.
That's really there. They've got about, I think, 46 employees in that team. And this is really just a first document out there, which might later form standards. So the idea is that they put this out at the moment. It's public, so it welcomes feedback. So it's out on GitHub, so you can... If you think this report is missing something they should be looking into, you can add to it. And we'll talk about that. But Yeah, we've got a summary. Do you want to just run through these, Nathan? We've got, I tried to divide it up, what the report is saying.
Okay, so just to read what's on the screen, really. Ethical and societal, it's hard to say, impacts are transparency, data usage. Some of them have got little parentheses at the end. Privacy, which is protecting personal data. Security, impersonation concerns. Sustainability, the environmental side of sustainability, and balancing interests, and that really refers to the fairness to the content creators and the consumers. And I'm sure that if you ponder each of those for just a moment, you can see in a real world example of where AI might be able to abuse any of those individual bits. You know, obviously sustainability, if we all rely on AI for everything, we're going to be burning through carbon at an incredibly quick rate. Balancing interests, do content creators, you know, who owns what? If the LLMs are allowed to sock up all of the data without giving credit back, and, you know, they appear to be the origin of that particular piece of content, whereas in fact it was written by somebody, I don't know, 10 years ago or what have you. Mm-hmm. And each of them, just ponder it for a moment and you'll be able to figure out how that might be of a concern.
Yeah. And then I think the next, because it's sort of sectioned up, and the next thing is really addressing those because it's the technical impact and standardization proposals. So obviously what the W3C, as a standards organization for the web, it likes to ultimately come up with some standards, which we all agree to. So it's really addressing all of the next ones with a sort of consent mechanism for AI content in AI training, development of personal data stores for data control, labeling of AI-generated content to combat misinformation exposing model-backed web IPAs while maintaining interoperability and evaluating the environmental impact of AI systems on the web.
Can I just say, I do like the idea of a web IPA. Which is what you actually said, a web-based Indian pale ale. That would be really nice. I think you meant to say API, but I prefer what you said. Can I just say, though, just getting back, before you put this document together, I didn't really know anything about this at all. And I honestly didn't think this was any concern of the W3C. I couldn't in my head have imagined, well, why do they want to get involved with this? And then, of course, when you put this together and I started thinking about it, really, somebody's got to be thinking about it. And that's really where it comes down, because it has to be some sort of more global approach, an approach where big business doesn't get its tendrils, where government doesn't necessarily get its tendrils. And so all of a sudden, the penny dropped. And I thought, actually, yeah, this is brilliant. We do need people who are detached from it all. They have no economic motive, no political motive, whatever it may be. It's brilliant that they're thinking about this. And they seem like fairly sensible default starting positions.
Yeah.
You carry on.
No, well, I had the same thought as well. It's trying to understand what the W3C has. And I think it does have a unique power when we've talked about it before with the working groups, particularly with CSS, how, you know, within those working groups, it's bringing to the table big tech. It's bringing Microsoft, Apple, Google, Adobe to agree what they think the web should look like, these standards. So it's obviously the best body, given that AI pretty much appears through the web. What other organization could get everybody around the table? And you can see, we were talking about this a little bit earlier about how there might be a benefit to, say, Google, because its main business is through its advertising, through its search, particularly. That's its main business. One of its biggest worries and one of the things they're tackling here is, how do we mark up on the web stuff so people know it's AI generated? And of course, Google want that more than anything for their own business, you know, as well as being on the side of supplying AI as well. They also want to control that for that aspect of their business. So there's a good reason for everybody to try and agree things, I think, to some standards. So where is expected of us as developers, you know, when we're putting sites together, that we declare our AI content, you know?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really difficult for the W3C to have teeth in this, in that it'll be easier for them to just create some recommendations, which we would hope people would follow. But maybe this will be one of those situations. So, for example, at the moment, it does appear that accessibility, so nothing to do with AI for a moment, just accessibility, is gaining teeth because politicians around the world are putting laws together which say, look, unless you do this, you're going to feel the strong arm of the law. You know, if your website is not accessible in these certain ways, and here's the guidance for how that should look. But now we're going to give it teeth. And that's coming around in next year in the EU. And maybe this sort of stuff over time will need that approach as well, because you can imagine it'll be easy to just ignore any of those points and just say, well, yeah, nice idea, but my country, the jurisdiction that I live in, doesn't compel me to do it. So I'm not going to do it. Yeah, I'm going to steal that content and claim it as my own. Who cares? So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of this report is that it does, I mean, it's the first stage in it. So right. At the moment, it's out there as a partly written document where people can add in their views on things that should be. And there's a couple of them we'll come on to that in a minute. So this, but then they'll move on to stakeholder interviews, which I guess we'll be talking to the likes of Google,
yeah,
Microsoft, and what they're doing on that. And then it'll move into the W3C workshops in the way that they might go about standardizing anything like CSS. Yeah. Yeah. But I think it surely it should be welcomed by, you know, when you think that you might have Microsoft competing with Google over, you know, I'm sure everybody wants this to be a success in you know, the end. So if everybody can agree some standards of which they will work to on the web, then it's to the benefit of everyone. So I think that's where they are unique. But yeah, it does seem a little odd to me, you know, when, because most of our news about AI is not really, you think of it as a separate endeavor, and one which potentially, and that's another argument of it, could remove the need for the web entirely, you know?
Yeah, you're imagining a scenario where you just got a nice little pocket assistant or something, and a lot of the things that you're doing on the web, you've now consigned to this AI, which is sitting in a device in your pocket or something like that. And you don't need to browse web pages because, I don't know, you just ask it a question and it provides you with an answer.
Yeah.
Kind of undermines what the internet has become. Yeah, this is, honestly, this is so interesting. I with those ethical and societal impacts, I can't think of anything that they've missed, but I'm sure that you're right. As the days, weeks, and months go on, I'm sure there'll be other things thrown in there. But at the moment, we do seem to be in a cycle of hype. And yes. I'm seeing it more like that as a cycle, a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you like, where one AI company promises a thing. And so the other AI companies have to overpromise because of that promise. And then, you know, the original one then has to overpromise. And we do seem to be in an era at the moment, and you only have to watch the tech conferences, you know, like Google's I/O and things like that, and they portray AI being this entirely benign, perfect force where you show it a thing and it tells you what it is, and you ask it a question and it gives you the right answer, and it does really seem like the hype cycle that we might have had for things like crypto or NFTs a little while ago. And give it a year, that cycle will just, you know, people will realize, oh, you know what? It can't do everything for me. But
yeah, I mean, there's certainly that cynical. We've been watching some videos that have come out, you know, by, you know, kind of business people who just say this whole AI thing is exactly like that. It's another thing. It was big data before that. It's been wearables. It's been Bitcoin. It's been, and this is just another, you know, raising funds, Silicon Valley hype. Hoax, if you like. And certainly, I think people have been caught into, as we know, with Google, it kind of cheated and got found out for showing some of its demonstrations of what its AI can do, where, you know, it's supposed to be able to identify certain shapes and tell you exactly where it was, where it needed human intervention. And we had a big thing with Amazon as well, where they claim it was a success, but it needed all of these operatives in India creating the, it was a checkout for their store where they didn't need to go and purchase anything, but cameras with real people were doing it. And now they claim the AI was a success, but they still closed it down and they still removed a lot of their documentation before. So I think there's a certain element where I'm sure none of these companies wanted to get into this kind of, almost having to get into lives, if you like, to compete.
Yeah.
They could, you know, somebody starts it with an exaggeration, somebody else has to beat it because they're in competition and they get stuck in it, really.
One could gently call it over-promising, I suppose.
Over-promising, you know, is probably a better thing. But you know what I mean? I don't think it's, you know, it's probably not where any of these companies want to be. It's just the way, that's just the way capitalism works, isn't it? So everybody, you know, you have to try and get the best competitive advantage. So I would imagine, you know, the WCC have that ability in the past to agree. And I think we've only just seen that with a web where everybody agrees, yes, the web, we want a standard set of code and we all want to agree what that one is and we all want to make the web work on everything. So I can see how it can be a good place for AI to be there. But there is that argument. Sorry, I wanted to just say something on that. I think it's alluded to in somebody's GitHub addition to this. And I think it was that you could say it's a threat to the web itself in the sense that, and I've seen other people talk about this. So if you say, for example, PDFs, they are very difficult because they're not web
right,
make accessible and you have to put all this embedded stuff in. What they're saying these days is that large language machines can kind of read that stuff and work out how the content is. So that work might not need to be done in a way. And we see that a little bit, I think, with a lot of SEO saying about Google, how when we were in the age of the big data, mark everything up with schema.org or rich snippets that they called it was the way to go. Let's break it up. But a lot of SEOs are saying, well, and it's true of Google, they seem to be dropping the support for a lot of these things, partly because it might be over abused. But I think it's partly because they don't need it so much because the machines can kind of work out the content areas of sites. Some things which, so you can get into that argument where you're saying, well, a lot of the fundamentals of the web, which we agreed to, do we need them in the same way? Do we need old tags any longer? You know, if they're being read in a different way with AI, and you know, do we need ARIA labels and stuff if screen readers can detect themselves with new technology what a page markup is, you know? So
yeah,
quite interesting. There is a potential for some of the web to be undermined with that.
I was going to say something there, but I'll wait because it is what we're going to come on to. But it was about the capacity of AI to actually get all of that stuff right, you know, the DOM and what have you. So shall I just scroll up a little bit more and we'll go on to the next little bit. So, okay, so we're on to Jacob Nielsen, I guess. Did you want to mention him?
Yeah, it was just somebody else made the point that in that report it isn't talking about accessibility, and Jacob Nielsen, the king of usability, as it was called, thinks, he wrote an article, and I've linked to it there, that usability has kind of failed. People don't use the ARIA labels correctly, don't mark their HTML up in the way that screen readers can easily read them, and that generative AI could start to do that job, which is really the point I'm making. So
yeah, that was the point I was going to make as well. And I think that kind of makes sense. Wouldn't this be an area where AI would be very good because it's got a very defined outcome? You know, has it been marked up correctly for a screen reader? Ignoring the fact that in the future, screen readers might operate in a different way. For the screen readers that we've got today, would AI be potentially quite good at this because it could see, I don't know, this is a paragraph, this is a heading, that is a heading nested within another heading, so let's give that an H2 and that an H3 and whatever else we might add to the HTML, the markup. It feels like that would be an area where you could just maybe click a button and it would do a better job than you not doing it at all, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I think that's, I see Jacob Nielsen's point, and I see he's had some pushback by a lot of people, actually. And I understand their pushback, and I think this is where I don't think that's the right thinking, because I think you do need people to mark up, because you need another human marking this up to make sense to a human. I mean, admittedly, it's better than nothing, but I don't think it'll get rid of the idea that marking up documents with HTML properly with a concentration on accessibility. And I think in some ways is skipping the point, as you raised, the fact that next year we've got a European law which is requiring many of us to do our websites in a more accessible way. So yes, he's right in the fact that it's failed, but then there's been nobody policing this. And I think we're seeing more policing of it. And I think human beings marking up documents rather than letting AI do it is better, because they will mark it up with the context of how it's expected to be explained. In the same way that I said about alt text as well, you know, there's no point in describing the whole flipping thing.
Right.
It's really how that image relates. Does it relate at all? If not, it needs a blank, and don't read it out to people who don't need to know it. You know, yeah. It's just decorative. And I don't think AI can then distinguish that kind of stuff in situ, you know.
AI might be better than doing nothing at all, but it's probably not going to be as good as doing something with humans, if you know what I mean. I think that's a sensible default position.
Yeah.
You know, if your organization is going to do something, it would appear that just clicking a button and praying that the AI didn't hallucinate its way into just nonsense is probably not going to get you out of legal woes in the near future. Yeah. Okay. And then we've got Tim Berners-Lee.
Yeah, so he's been, because it's been the 35th anniversary of the web.
Yeah. Gosh.
I know, it's getting old. He's made there's a couple of things, and I've linked to them on the bottom of this, and maybe I'll add some more links in because we reference some things as well. But so he's done an open letter about the web where he talks about that, but also there's another article which is by CNBC where they go into some of his predictions, and included in that is AI, or as I'm seeing on my notes, it says A1.
Yeah, which is a road in the UK. Yeah. There's going to be roadworks around Grantham.
the big takeaways from this I've added to that was the fact that he thinks it's going to transform the way we interact with the web. And Google, interestingly, have been like that as well recently, saying let Google do the Googling for you. It's just kind of a new take on what we expect the deal to be with Google. But yeah, he's saying that it'll transform how we interact. And he sees, and I'm not so optimistic as him, that we'll all have AI assistants do work for us, similar to how our doctors, lawyers, or bankers do. So he's very optimistic, isn't he, about AI, more so than me and you.
Do you know what? That almost to me sounds like a bit of a dystopia. There's a film that I watched, and it's got nothing to do with this, but there was a film that I watched recently where, and it was a dystopian future film, but there was a bit where the protagonist, the character in the film, went up and talked to a robot to get his prescription. And there was an actual robot, which, you know, it had a lights flashing on the mouth, but no other moving parts. And it was just this horrific conversation of, you know, I'm owed this thing, can I have it? Well, we don't seem to have this fault, you know, really robotic voice. Anyway, back and forth, and just nothing but frustration. And that concerns me, that piece, because that seems to undermine the humanity of a lot of things. And that bit, okay, maybe that's where we'll go, but I fear that that's where we're going to go. That doesn't seem like a good incentive for humanity, particularly. But
No. I mean, you know, a lot of services we have is because of that personal connection with people. It's almost acting like counseling as well. And a lot of people grieve over the loss of that human connection.
Yeah.
Their transactions. So, yeah, I think he's a little bit more optimistic than I would be. He does also, and it's kind of related, it's not under his AI predictions, but he is predicting, as he wrote in his open letter as well, about sort of breakup of big tech as well. He sees that happening. And I think, you know, this is the problem, isn't it? We are in an advanced capitalist world, and we are seeing that, money is going to, you know, concentrated in certain areas. We have big tech, they have an awful lot of power, and we are seeing, you know, getting to the point where we have to see the US government will be taking a lawsuit out against Apple to make sure there's competition there. We've got something new that's just passed, doesn't it, for the EU as well, which gives more control over big tech so it doesn't abuse its position. So I do think there may be a need to,
you know. And also, interestingly, it is largely big tech which is pushing this agenda of what AI can do. You know, I mean, there's no like tin pot little cottage industry mom and pop AI out there, which is, you know, a good rival to something like OpenAI or Gemini or whatever. It is the big tech who are, and we mentioned it a moment ago, this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy where they've got to overpromise because the other one's overpromising, and it's the big tech doing it, and they've got a really big stage. And honestly, they could fill those presentations with utter lies. And I think at the moment we just lap it all up because, oh look, it can do that. That's exciting. So I think you're right. It does appear like the legislators around the world have got the sword of Damocles definitely above the heads of these big tech companies. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yes, governments having to take a part in this just to see that, yeah, they don't have too much power. And we were talking about, you know, how interesting it is with Gen Z seeing things very different, being a kind of first generation that doesn't have job security and house insecurity, that they are a slightly cynical where, you know, big companies where money's going on that. So they change their behavior there. Behavior with big tech, they kind of see in a way what's going on, where, you know, who has all the power with that. So I think that's changing things on the ground. I do think, you know, with Tim Berners-Lee, and he always sticks to this because it's partly as well, I think, a business that is running, it's big on everything, where this has to be set in the context of the fact that his ideal web is one where the users own their own data.
I'm a big proponent of that, but it'd be interesting because it would appear that some of the big tech companies, particularly Apple, it would appear that they're moving in that direction, in that they're, it feels that, although they have just been in chat with OpenAI apparently, so we'll see if this breaks out, but is that the AI will be done on your device. So, you know, these M4 chips that are coming down the pipe will be really good at doing everything on your own device. So whereas at the moment you're used to going to OpenAI or Gemini, and that's an online portal, you type your things in, and whether you're using the API or the web interface, you get a result through the internet. It feels like the future is going to be doing that on your own device, so you own it and it never goes anywhere else. So maybe Apple will sort of justify not being broken up on that grounds. I don't know.
Yeah, you mentioned something about there's no, you know, mom and pop AI business there. We both watched a video which we kind of liked in a way, but it was on YouTube, and it's a guy called Mike Pound, and it's on his channel. I'll put the link in because I haven't got it there. Computer File. And this was the one, if you remember, Nathan, where he was looking at some of the scientific reports, and we're always talking about the massive advance in AI and what it can do within a whole year. But all their reports, or what he was looking at, and we have to trust him that his reports are there, but it seemed a very sound man talking, saying that that progress will slow down because the cost of getting the quality, because it's so easy to gather a load of data and that not to be that great, which means everything's always looking back. But like I say, it's rubbish with CSS because there's so little data about modern CSS and everything's old. So to correct it, you need so much more data to keep throwing at it that the costs become too much, you know, in terms of the businesses to advance. It becomes too much to invest in it to be able to get the improvements back. And then that's the other debate, which we've heard a lot. You mentioned it on your news show about the environmental costs of AI with all of that.
Boy, that's just horrific. Yeah, I think, you know, if you think Googling things is bad, If you AI things, you know, if you request an answer from an AI, you really are burning through the carbon much, much more quickly than just going onto a variety of websites and finding it out for yourself. Obviously, it's a lot quicker, but every time you create an AI image or an AI song or do an AI search, my understanding is that, from journalists that I think have credibility, that it's burning through CO2 at a really alarming rate, and something which really shouldn't be sustainable. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it does seem like there's a little bit of awareness now that this will actually pan out, you know, like all the things as mentioned before, the kind of Silicon Valley stuff, that's the big thing that's going to make money. You know, there's a lot of other people as well saying, you know, this potentially could be another dot-com bust, you know?
Yeah, well, if it doesn't continue to get better at an exponential rate, we'll quickly grow tired of it because that's the human condition, isn't it? And the YouTube video, which you're going to link to, but isn't on the screen at the moment, I think you did a really credible job of explaining that. And, you know, rather than the graph going upwards, it went up for a long time because the LLM suddenly enabled things which were not possible. And so it looked like it was being creative, and it looked like it was human almost, and it looked like it was passing the Turing test. But his argument was that, okay, you had to consume all the data to get to that point. And then to make it twice as good as it is now is not just about putting double the amount of data in. You're like 1,000 times the amount of data to get a teeny tiny improvement. So you put another billion data points in and you get 0.0.1 of a percent improvement. You've got to add another 10 billion. And where does it all come from?
Well, yeah.
You know, and if we end up filling it in with AI data, then we're in trouble. But it made me more sanguine about it. You know, it's leveling off and potentially it won't get any better. Obviously, you know, we're recording this in June 2024. When the robots have taken over in August 2025, we'll have to revise this podcast.
I do think about it takes us full circle with all the things we're talking, which I think when we look at the ethical and societal impact and the things that they're trying to standardize, it touches on all of these things. You know, the sort of data usage, what data you're using over this. You know, if everybody's agreed to certain things, we'll have proper competition rather than, do you know what I mean? There'll be more honesty with it. And I think also, you know, I mean, something that's not been resolved yet is the content creators. It's stealing all of their work. And I think some people have done some experiments with, because it's such a small data set, if you get into something very niche and you ask AI it, it will almost duplicate what someone else
more or less you are robbing, quite literally.
Yes.
The exact
and some of the people have done some experiments where they've done it on something so niche, or even tested it by kind of putting up wrong information on the web, so the AI comes back with the wrong information that is on the web because it's the only source, but it almost entirely rips off the whole article and serves it back. So I think, you know, when it comes to standardizing some of this stuff, when it starts to look into the fairness of to content creators in some standards, and it looks to the kind of data usage, and it looks to what's sustainable as well, I really hope that AI do get around the table around this kind of thing to create standards, because it's not in their interest, I don't think. I think AI is promising. I think it can help us to do a lot of jobs, and we both use it and love some of the things it can do for us.
It's interesting, though. But okay, so all of these organizations are made up of humans, and it is in their interest to not do this in the short term, because there's going to be billionaires made in the next year, and then they can just swan off and do whatever else they want. But for the long term interest, if OpenAI and Google want to have an AI future that spans decades, then there is an interest. But I think one of the things that I'm concerned about at the moment is the self-interest of a few people at the top of these companies who are, you know, making money like they're printing it, and it is in their interest to just do the nefarious stuff, to overpromise, to all of that, and We don't seem to have a way of reining those people in at the moment. That could be a very naive position. Maybe they're full of good intentions, and I'm probably, you know, labeling them incorrectly, but it feels a bit like that sometimes.
No, of course, and it's going to happen. And I think this is a good organization, and I hope it does succeed with that, because I think we talked about another success before when you think the web could have been lost to Flash. Proprietary technology, you know, that could easily, and a lot of people believed in it, it would be in the self-interest, but somehow it managed to preserve. And I think there's never been a time where the biggest giants in tech have got behind something like the W3C. So we see the security of this web project. And I don't, you know, I was saying about before, could it replace the web? I don't think it will, because it takes so long anyway for people to adopt new technology, and it's more effective, the one that we've got. And everybody is behind that, you know?
Yeah,
the setting up of these. So I think it would be a good thing. And even if there is a lone wolf out there who, you know, perhaps wants to exaggerate for their personal quick gain or something, because that's the danger, isn't it, with everything. Somebody tells a lie to exaggerate something. They do really well out of that lie because people believe it and they get lots of money. So the only way you can compete it is with another lie, and on it goes. And everybody goes, please, I wish we'd stop with this lying. And I think
that's right. Oh dear. Well, I mean, we've definitely solved that problem for everybody, haven't we?
Yeah, that's solved it. Everybody. I think it's interesting anyway. And, you know, just hardly going to get any attention, the fact that there is this document out there. And I think, you know, I think it'd be interesting to see how that develops and whether we get AI standards coming from the W3C. Yeah, I think that would be a fabulous thing if it could be done.
Perfect. I've taken the show notes away. So that was episode 13. That was our thoughts on AI and the W3C's approach to it. The show notes, as always, noscript.show/ the episode number, in this case 13. Go and check them out there. And you too will be able to see Tim Berners-Lee's predictions as to what will happen to the A1. I doubt it. I'm sure David will go and change that in a hurry. But that was lovely. Thank you, David. I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, cheers. Bye.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that. Very, very nice, as always, chatting with David Wormsley. I hope you got something out of that episode. If you did, firstly, go to noscript.show and bookmark that website. That's where we'll be carrying on. I think I'm going to inject one more of this podcast into the WP Builds feed. The other thing that you could do, of course, is to go to wpbuilds.com. Search for episode number 381 in the podcast feed and leave us some comments in the beautiful WordPress commenting system over there. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. You can find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. And we're also sponsored by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And we're also sponsored by OmniSend. OmniSend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet OmniSend. Yes, that OmniSend, the email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of roller coaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try OmniSend today at omnisend.com. And sincere thanks go to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost, and OmniSend for their continuing support of the WP Builds podcast. Okay, that truly is all that we've got time for. Like I said, I hope that you enjoyed it. Don't forget to subscribe at wpbuilds.com/subscribe. We'll see you for This Week in WordPress live on Monday, wrapped up as a podcast on Tuesday, and we'll be back next Thursday for a podcast episode a little bit like this, but with an interview twist. All that it remains for me to do is to fade in some cheesy music. Say, stay safe and have a good week. Bye-bye for now.